it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Shamrock, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on-demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. We're talking about a game that we didn't think we would spend more than 5 minutes hashing out afterwards. But there is, man, there is a lot to get to, and not all of it on a 90-second delay. Notre Dame 32, Toledo 29. Matt, where do you want to start? I was there. I have thoughts.
I have Peacock. I have thoughts.
You have thoughts that are just 90 seconds later than mine. What did you make of that? That it was really one of the more bizarre Notre Dame games I've covered, and I have covered many, many bizarre ones.
There are a lot of thoughts. There are a lot of numbers. There are a lot of takeaways. The one that really is like seared into my mind right now is Notre Dame just played a MAC team, and a good MAC team, but I mean they've not won the MAC title yet under Jason Candle, as good as they've been. And they played him to a draw in the ground game, 132-132. That's not supposed to happen. I spent so much time, I feel like, in the preseason kind of dismissing Cincinnati and some other not quite upper echelon teams on Notre Dame's schedule, thinking they just can't hang physically with Notre Dame. And my God, like, that narrative got flipped completely on its head today. Like, last week was one thing. Florida State, which, as poor as they've been in recent years, has really good players, had national TV, sellout crowd, emotional moment. This was a MAC team that, frankly, I didn't think played all that well. They were terrible offensively. I mean, Toledo should have won this game. Like, a halfway decent offense would have won this game against Notre Dame today. And Toledo just couldn't do it. I mean, they're probably sick on the bus ride home right now. I know it doesn't affect their place in the MAC race, but, like, that was a golden opportunity Toledo let slip away. And if you're Notre Dame and you're on the other side of that, hearing that losing MAC team being described in those terms when they came into your house and nearly knocked you off, I mean, I guess we got to get used to this, because this is 2 weeks where we're having pretty much the same conversation, and I don't think you can get by like this. You can live like this week to week.
No, definitely not. It's a situation where I feel like what today did different from last week was today threw everything up for grabs the rest of the season for Notre Dame. Like, Florida State on the road, emotional moment, winning overtime. Like, I mean, that was a great game to watch and to cover. It didn't necessarily feel like it was going to be indicative of a whole lot more coming out of it. Today felt like it was going to be indicative of the rest of the season. Not that Notre Dame is going to scuttle the rest of the way, but I feel like for all the goodwill Notre Dame has built up about being sort of a known quantity on Saturdays, you know, beating every unranked team they play, untouchable at home, even in tight games. Today, to me, you come out thinking like, all right, are they going to beat Purdue? I think they're going to beat Purdue. But then you got five straight games over ranked competition, all of them having an extra week to prepare for you. You know, Virginia at the end of the season looks different to me now. Look, Navy, Stanford, Georgia Tech, those teams are not good. But, you know, what is Toledo going to finish? Are they going to go 10-2? Are they going to go 9-3? I mean, they look pretty good, but it's not – for a team that's stated goal is to make the college football playoff again, I mean, Notre Dame is a million years away from that right now. And that's – I thought that this was a team – and I asked Brian Kelly after the game. I think this is almost exactly the way I phrased it. I said – you know, look, this was a team that you knew was going to have to grow through the season, grow into the season. But after these first 2 weeks, is there more growth that's necessary than even you would have thought? And, I mean, we both covered this guy for a while. He usually is very quick with answers.
He paused forever.
He paused for a long time. you know, it was one of the things, like, one of our colleagues in the box was like, I thought the audio went out on the press conference. There was just a lot. There's just a lot for Brian Kelly to process right now. Some of it is predictable. Like, he knew the offensive line was going to be a bit of a struggle, maybe not to this level. He knew the running game was going to struggle a little bit, not to this level. But I think what he didn't expect at all was the defense to play the way that it's played through 2 weeks. 4 60-yard plays in two games. You know, Clark Lee allowed 3 in 3 years. It's that's a really bizarre place for Notre Dame to be, to just sort of like not know who you are. And then on top of it, throw in you're playing two quarterbacks now for the foreseeable future, right? There's no way, which in this, I mean, even this is a weird dynamic, right? Like, one quarterback led a game-winning touchdown drive with a dislocated finger, and yet you're like, well, he's got to rotate with his freshman who played for the first time.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in. I mean, you said, yeah, they'll probably be Purdue. I don't know. Florida State, as we speak, is losing in the second quarter at home to Jacksonville State. So, like, I don't know. Like, nothing is for granted right now. Like, Toledo.
No. I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like, it throws everything up for grabs, which is just not something I expected to say about
it. No, I didn't either. And, you know, we had this recording Monday night, Tuesday morning. And me and you kind of went back and forth. You sounded more concerned about the offensive line after one game. I sounded more concerned after the defense. I think we're both right, because neither of those really got fixed today. I will say this. Yep. As weird as it is talking about quarterback when there might be a controversy, I don't know. Like, Jack Cohn probably should be 2 for 2 in game-winning drives this year. Like, he did it last week. Michael Mayer dropped it. They ended up in winning in overtime. He did it this week with a dislocated finger. But I'm not going to lie to you. Like, they got the ball with however much time was left. And I did not – I wouldn't say comfortable. I had faith in Jack Cohn to go out there. His suit, like, once Notre Dame put him out there and it was like, all right, we're not messing around anymore. You're a redshirt senior. Go out there and win the game. And they didn't screw around and they got the ball to Michael Mayer. Like, I fully expect him to go down and score, maybe not as quickly as they did. But my first reaction is there's 1:09 left. They're up 3 points. This defense absolutely is capable of blowing this. Like, that was my initial reaction when they scored. And that probably... it's not a healthy reaction. It's not a healthy place to be as a program right now. But that's the reality of the situation. I mean, the other part of it too, I know it wasn't exactly by design. You talk about a ballsy 2-point conversion when if that thing gets returned the other way, you're losing. You're up 1 point then. Like, there is a lot of potential for bad stuff to happen there, which is why I thought Toledo kicked an extra point when they scored a touchdown instead of going for 2 to go up 6, because if something went disastrous on their end, Notre Dame's now down 2 instead of down 5. That one was frightening from a Notre Dame fan standpoint as well. I mean, they're just – nothing was easy about this game. Nothing's been easy about this season so far. I'm going to throw out two examples there that both are going to sound positive, even though I don't think Notre Dame's going undefeated. Sorry. But, like, it reminded me of 2012 Purdue where – Everett Golson's our starter. He's our starter. He's our starter. Oh, wait, now he's not. Tommy Rees comes in to save the day. Now neither quarterback's going to speak post-game, and we're all going to have to, like, fill in the narratives ourselves. Or 2018, when they had a very similar performance against Ball State, another not-great MAC team at the time, that ended up culminating with Brandon Wimbush getting benched. Now, Jack Cohn's playing a hell of a lot better right now than Brandon Wimbush did back then, so I don't see that happening, but, like, those are, like, the straws I'm grasping at from an optimistic standpoint of, like, they've had similar starts that turned out into good seasons, but I just – that's it. Like, the parallels start and stop right there. I just they could win a lot of games this year, but, like, buckle up and take your blood pressure medicine because it's not going to be a smooth ride at all.
Yeah, and how to be clear, I think I said this all off season and after the Florida State game, like, the one thing that I was confident in about Notre Dame is that they'd be really entertaining. This is not what I meant. This is not what I meant at all. I did not expect, like, a 75-yard game-winning drive in 26 seconds against Toledo. But, I mean, one of the things that Brian Kelly said, which I found interesting, was, like, I think he has been sort of taken aback a little bit by how good Austin and Mayer are, in the sense of he would rather build around the offensive line in the run game. And maybe that's just not who Notre Dame is going to be this year. You know, Notre Dame may be a chuck it all over the yard team, which is sort of who Brian Kelly used to be. But you know, you see Kyren Williams, see Chris Tyree, 55-yard touchdown today from Tyler Buchner. I think the personnel, the strengths and weaknesses are – the strengths are maybe a little bit stronger and the weaknesses are more acute offensively than maybe what Notre Dame thought when the season started.
Not to be a harbinger of bad omens, but as you were saying that, I had the Michigan game on and the trivia question came up and said, Michigan's been playing football for 100-something years. When's the first time they played a night game? And we were all there for that one. I can't stress this enough. Toledo, like you talk about that last Notre Dame drive, Toledo had 8 penalties in the fourth quarter. They had 3 on defense on that deciding drive. They had one on the ensuing kickoff when they needed field position to try to tie or win the game. And then they got 2 more on their final offensive drive. Like, it sounds crazy, but like Toledo kind of gift wrapped this game to Notre Dame. Like, Notre Dame did not deserve to win this game. Like, they did not.
I mean, even Brian Kelly said that immediately post game, right? Like, he thought that Toledo played harder and, you know, maybe deserved to win.
They dropped a touchdown in the first half, too. Completely dropped one on third down. That changes the course of things,
right,
too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could look at it as like, did Cam Hart drop an interception? Did Kyle Hamilton have an interception that got taken away? Yes. I mean, maybe that's -6 points. But, I mean, think about it from the point of view of Daquan Finn, Toledo's number 2 quarterback. On third and one, when he sprints around his left tackle and runs untouched for the end zone, what if he just runs to the middle field?
Yeah,
and slides?
Someone, a couple guys tweeted that at me.
I mean, that's like, I'm not blaming him or Jason Candle for that. That's like, you know, college football is, you know, that would have been a weird scenario. Nor does Toledo have like the world's greatest kicker. So it would not have been an automatic 3 points, but just like how on knife's edge. I say that because the game was really on knife's edge right there. And it really could have gone, you know, I mean, Notre Dame could have lost to a MAC school for the first time. They could have had the 24 game winning streak snapped, the 33 game at home, 33 game winning streak against unranked teams snapped. I mean, and at that point, you know, it'd be too dramatic to say like the season's over, but you don't lose to a MAC school and accomplish your goals if you're Notre Dame. Not in any season, let alone one where you're coming off a college football playoff berth.
No, I agree. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Mike Tirico said when Tyler Buchner came into the game, he said this was part of the plan coming into the day. So presumably Tommy Rees gave him a heads up, or Brian Kelly did. As surprising as that was, I thought it was a great call because at that point, like, you just cannot move the ball on the ground. The RPO plays don't work when the run is not an option for the quarterback. And they needed something to loosen that defense up and to gain some yards. And it worked and ended up, frankly, being the difference in the game. Which, again, is crazy to say that, like, Notre Dame had trouble getting push up front against those guys. And look, to Toledo's credit, they played a hell of a game in the front 7. They got after it, and they gave their offense a chance to win the game there. But, I do think Notre Dame is lucky to have a guy like Jack Cohn who's kind of, I mean, I hate to make the Rees comparison. I feel like he's got Tommy Rees's makeup in that, like, he's not going to go sit in the corner and pout if they pull him for a play or a drive for Tyler Buchner to come in and bring something different to the offense. I don't know too many situations around the country where you could pull off a two-quarterback system the way Notre Dame is trying to do it right now, where it wouldn't automatically be a disaster. I think it takes a unique type of individual who's comfortable at that QB1 spot like Cohn is to make it work for everything else, for everyone else. Same way Tommy Rees did in 2012, when anytime you do something good, it was like, all right, back to the bench. Here comes Everett Golson. That said, I mean, people were talking about this guy winning the Heisman a week ago. Now we're talking about whether he has a job or not. Welcome to Notre Dame football, where there's no such thing as overreaction.
Yeah, he can get together with Marcus Freeman on that head coach and waiting to, like,
yeah, which one was more premature?
Yeah, right. I do, you know, one observation post game that I thought, you know, is probably notable is, you know, we're down on the field for the last 5 minutes, but we're sort of confined to an area, so I can't really move around anymore like I used to. But I made sure to watch Tyler Buchner leave the field because I just wanted to see, like, all right, what's – is he like, holy crap, I can't believe that just happened, or like, I can't believe I almost lost, or this should be my job, or whatever. But I watch him walk off the field. Who's he walking off the field with? Jack Cohn. What are they doing? They're laughing, smiling, like kind of like – I don't want to like presume that they were like, holy crap, what a game. Like, did you see what you did? Did you see what you did? You had the broken finger. You're a freshman. You came in. It's unbelievable. But I do know that Tyler Buchner holds Jack Cohn in like very high regard. And to your point, I think that Jack Cohn probably has some of that Reese DNA of like, what do we need to do to win? Let's just do that. You know, and look, Jack Cohn's been through the highly touted freshman phenom before, right? So he would have reason to be leery of that. But I, you know, it's like, Jack Cohn's game-winning drive where he hits Austin Mayer, penalty, dislocated finger, Mayer again. That's, I mean, that was pretty ballsy last 25 seconds for a guy who was not bad today, but, like, wasn't great. You know, the pick six was forced, didn't see pressure a lot. But it, I don't think that this is a situation, unlike one of the ones that Reese had lived through with two quarterbacks, that the quarterbacks can't get along, that they can't, you know, build on one another and learn from one another. Buchner learning from Cohn in particular.
Definitely. I mean, you do wonder about the sustainability of that system as far as just like plotting it out strategically throughout the course of the season from an X's and O's standpoint. But, you know, go back to something you said earlier, Daquan Quinn, the Toledo second quarterback, if you will, who may or may not have should have knelt at the one. I thought when they put him in the first half, they killed a little bit of their own momentum. I thought Toledo had a good thing going. And Notre Dame's defense, for as much as we've kind of ragged on them, and deservedly so, it did not dawn on me until Mike Tirico literally on the play this happened said, Toledo does not have a first down this half, before Kobach broke off a 67-yard run. And Toledo ends up scoring on two of its final three drives to have a chance to win the game. I mean, it was – I put more of that on Toledo's offense, frankly, than I do on Notre Dame's defense. The quarterbacks were kind of all over the place with the ball. But it seems a very boom or bust, which is not at all what we're used to seeing with a Notre Dame defense, at least a good Notre Dame defense. Bob Diakos and Clark Lees, if you got them the lead, like, you could feel pretty good about things. And I frankly just did not feel good about things even on that last drive when there's 1:08 left and they're nursing a 3-point lead. Like, they were bailed out by a couple penalties and Toledo shot itself in the foot and that was that. But that's going to be an issue, one of many, they need to get fixed. I mean, I don't know what the Purdue final was today. I know it was against 49-0, okay, against UConn. I mean, that's basically a scrimmage at this point. But it's a Power 5 team with Power 5 players and a pretty darn good coach in Jeff Brohm. I mean, guess the spread right now for Notre Dame-Purdue.
9.
Really?
I mean, yeah.
Notre Dame favored, just to be clear.
Yeah, okay. Just to be clear. Well, it's, I mean, you mentioned the boomer bust aspect of the defense with Marcus Freeman. It's like, these are the, so they go down, they kick, they have a nice drive to start the game, right? They kick a field goal on it. These are the yardage totals of Toledo's drives from there. 42 minus 17, 19, 5, 35, 8 minus 1, 9 minus 7. And then you end up with the 89-yard drive that really like gets, turns the game on its head a little bit. So it's like, for the middle part of the game, I think you would have to say Notre Dame's defense played well, but I think you would also have to acknowledge that, like, you never felt totally secure that they would keep playing well, well, right?
Like, felt like last week.
That's sort of the thing. You're just sort of like a little, you're like worried about what's going to happen.
It felt like last week, though. I mean, if you look at it, and, you know, it's not completely apples to apples in comparison, but like, Notre Dame took Florida State out of the game end of second, third quarter last week. I mean, they're up 18 points. And they're living in the backfield with Jordan Travis. And you're thinking, same thing. Like, okay, Notre Dame's offense came to play today. The defense now is, and that's that. And second week in a row, they just haven't been able to keep that up for 30 straight minutes in the second half. And it almost cost them today. It will almost definitely cost them at some point. I would not guess the 9 point. I mean, I know nothing, clearly. I'm not in Vegas. And I thought Notre Dame being only 17-point favorites over Toledo was a little low. I have a hard time seeing that being anything more than a touchdown, and I would say probably more 4 or 5 at this point. Like, I just don't – like, what are you basing Notre Dame winning by more than one score against the best team they'll probably play all season to this point on?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. It's Purdue, I guess. I don't know. Notre Dame is in a really tricky situation. Like, this sort of gets back to something we said at the top of the show. You just don't know week in and week out. And like for the last 4 years, I feel like Notre Dame has been building this credibility that you do know. You know what kind of performance you're going to get. And like when Brian Kelly talks about the team coming out with a lack of intensity, and that's on him, like a lack of intensity for your first game in a pretty full stadium at home in a year, like, how does that happen? And then, you go down and score right away. I don't know if Notre Dame sort of got a false sense of security about it, but there's just way more to get figured out for Brian Kelly with this team this year than I think any, like, you or I thought, Brian Kelly thought, Tommy Rees thought, Marcus Freeman thought, anybody.
But that part isn't all that surprising. I mean, I think that's where, okay, like, they had a lot of veteran leadership walk out the door last year, and, like, that rears its ugly head in very random spots. And if it's a group of guys who haven't exactly been there, done that yet, but know that, hey, we're a part of a program that can pretty much dictate our own tempo, dictate, you know, the pace of the game based on how physical we've been the last 4 years, that part isn't all that surprising to me. Like, I didn't think they'd be this bad talent-wise, but...
Yeah, like, I would agree with you if, like, I watched this game next week. Like, if Notre Dame beat Purdue the way they beat Toledo, but they won today 42-21, then I would be like, yes. Like, they still have a lot to get figured out, but, like, we knew there was going to be a lot of bumps in the road. This is freaking Toledo. Like, this is a max.
But table. I think the, like, talent's what's been surprising to me. Like, the attitude, or I don't want to call it attitude, but the lack of intensity, whatever Brian Kelly, whatever phrase he used, I think that's human nature. And I think, again, you lose a 3-year start, it's not against Jack Cohn or Tyler Buchner, but, like, you don't know what you got till it's gone. I mean,
yeah.
Tommy Rees, no one took more criticism than that guy when he was a player. The minute he left, you know, that offensive line, even though he couldn't run the ball, just didn't look the same. Like, they're just – or excuse me, no, the USC game when he went out, Andrew Hendricks comes in. Like, things just – like, I don't know. They're just – there's something you can't replicate in college football about having – a solid group of fifth-year senior captains, guys who are multi-year captains, who have been under the bright lights and have been to multiple playoff appearances. When that leaves, like, I think it's very easy to see these guys just see Notre Dame on their chest, Toledo on the chest across, and our fans will even need to show up to this one because, you know, we already know what's going to happen, and it did it. Now, again, the fact that it's as close as it is, like, yes, like, they're not playing well. They're obviously not being coached as well. That part is very surprising to me. I'm not going to discount that whatsoever. But I just think we probably underestimated just how much left from a DNA standpoint last year.
I would agree with that. And I don't know. I mean, with the offensive line, is that a DNA issue or is that a talent and development issue?
Now,
to me, it's like as much the latter as it is the
former. I agree.
You know, the DNA part, like, Jack Cohn and Ian Book have, I think, similar DNA. Those guys are sort of cut from the same athletic cloth, right down to having, like, law enforcement backgrounds in their family. Like, I think there's a lot of similarities between the two of them. What has to be confounding if you're Brian Kelly, if you're Jeff Quinn, is, like, your offensive line is just not good. Like, it's not even, like, off-brand by Notre Dame standards. It's just bad. You can't move the ball against Toledo. Jonathan Jones is running unchecked up the middle to sack your quarterback. Like, you know, now you're down to your third-team left tackle in Tosh Baker, who was a top 100 recruit, who was replacing Michael Carmody, who was a top 200 recruit, who was replacing Blake Fisher, who was a top 50 recruit. Like, they should be better at that position, even if they're on their third guy. Kane Madden, I think, has really struggled. I did not think he played well at Florida State. I'll be interested to sort of go back and watch this a little bit more in detail if I can. But the line is really struggling. And I thought that they would take a big step back, but not like this. Like, this is – don't know, Brian Kelly described like Toledo's defense as mid-level ACC. Like, I think Notre Dame's offensive line is mid-level ACC right now. Which
yeah, I think
be.
That might be generous. No, that part is everything I just said about the experience of the NA factor. I did think some of that would carry over into an offensive line group that's been so good for so long despite losing so many key players. I mean, I just thought, obviously, Fisher's out, but Kay Madden, All-American last year at Marshall. I thought he would acclimate quicker and better. Jarrett Patterson, All-American candidate this year. Guys with starting experience like Logan Correll, even if they haven't always been at those exact spots, I am surprised they've struggled the way they have. Like, they haven't been good, period. Like you said, I mean, Toledo had their way with them today, and that's an issue going forward. I thought last week was a little more excusable given the talent they were facing, given the environment a lot of those guys were in for the first time. But like today's when that's not supposed to matter. And unfortunately for them, it did matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's was, I feel like Marcus Freeman, I still feel the same way I did last week. No, maybe not exactly, but similarly to
Tyler Buckner didn't change your mind.
Let me get there. I think Marcus Freeman will get the defense figured out before Jeff Quinn gets the offensive line figured out. Cause I'm not sure the offensive line is going to get figured out. Defensively, I just think they have too much material and too many smart coaches over there to like get it to stop the big plays from happening. You know, and the fundamentals of that, like the way Brian Kelly describes it, it's almost like this is the most basic thing in the world not to give up a 66 yeah. yard touchdown run to our 66 yard run or a 67 yard pass. But it's happening. I think the offensive line, it's just a lot more complicated. It's a much more nuanced fix with a lot more layers to it than what Marcus Freeman is dealing with defensively. So it's a much tougher ask for Jeff Quinn on that side of the ball. And I don't know where that goes, honestly. Like, I'm not sure. If you said Notre Dame's running game never got on track all season, that wouldn't blow me away.
I'm still very concerned about both. I don't know if I'd put one over the other. I mean, I didn't think that secondary was going to be all that great coming into this year, and they've kind of proven us right in that regard so far. Linebackers, I mean, as deep as they were, they're now like one injury away from hanging on from dear life, and we're two games into the season. So I don't know about defense. I mean, I think they will get better, but Brian Kelly said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something to the effect of like, Monday we got to come in and get even more fundamental or even more simple. And again, I'm paraphrasing, but like I think that might have been in response to your question when you asked about.
It was a couple questions, but yeah, it was a sort of they have to like. I don't know if it's like what are the sayings? Fish or cut bait or shit or get off the pot. I don't know what the sayings are, but like they have to sort of make a decision about like what the hell they want to be and then do it. Like even if they don't have 100% confidence that decision is the right one, it will be right because they will have made it. Does that make any sense?
I guess. I thought you were saying Fisher, like yeah. Fisher.
No. Yes. Not Blake Fisher. It has nothing to do with Blake Fisher. I just think they got to move in one direction. But I get the sense that direction will continue to be playing two quarterbacks, which is kind of a weird one direction to move in.
Looking around the country today, Ohio State lost. They've never lost a home. They've never lost a regular season game in the Ryan Day era. They lost today to an Oregon team that was down, I think, five starters on defense. Like, I just never in a million years would have thought that happened. Texas A&M's quarterback goes down. And they have a last-second miracle to win 10-7 against Colorado and Denver. Those are two top 10 teams. Notre Dame obviously survives a close call against Toledo today. Is it one of those years like 07 where just nothing makes sense and every week's going to be a season unto itself and we'll look up 12 weeks from now and some teams there?
You got to back off 07 on a Notre Dame podcast, right?
Oh. Fair enough.
That's not what you mean. When you say it's going to be like 07, that's not what you mean.
Correct. Okay. I just meant college football wise, that's probably the craziest college football season of any of our lifetimes. And it looks through 2 weeks like it could be veering in that direction so far this season. I don't know. I mean, I don't mean this to compare the two programs because one is more talented than the other right now. But like, would you rather be a Notre Dame fan right now or an Ohio State fan? I don't know. For this season. Like Ohio State, you're not allowed to lose. Like Ryan Day said that after missing, he's like, I'm not allowed to lose here. And they just lost. And they lost in a not convincing, but they were completely outplayed. And now who knows what's going to happen. Like it's national title or bust there every year. Notre Dame hasn't lost yet, and you could easily talk yourself into them winning a lot of games or every game on a one week at a time basis. Right. But I could also see them going like 5-7 if they keep this up and don't improve.
Yes, I mean I get your point on that. I guess I would. I don't know which camp you'd rather be in right now. I just think it, and I don't know how. Like, here's the question: like, how long is it going to take? How many performances will Notre Dame have to put together this season for you to feel like, all right, they got it, like they figured this out?
I don't say it's to be pessimistic. I just don't think like it's going to be ever be that kind of season this year.
You don't think it's going to happen?
They'll get better and they'll win games, and you'll feel better because the record will be better. But they're so far away right now from being a complete team that like the idea of them like playing this great game and snapping their fingers and figuring it out, like even last year, it wasn't until they went to Pitt and got away from home and overcame their COVID outbreak and had a, you know, uneven performance against Duke and Florida State and a couple other teams in there where it was like, oh shoot, this is a really good team. And here comes Brian Kelly already eyeing Clemson because they're ready. Like that's not going to happen. They beat Purdue 45-3 next week, maybe, but you've got Wisconsin and Cincinnati back-to-back, so it's not like you can exactly take your foot off the gas. Like, I just, you know, nothing's going to come easy this year, and it could make it really exciting, could make it disastrous. I don't know. It could go in a lot of different ways, but it's definitely...
Well, what about this? Like, let's think back to 3 years ago. They struggle at home against Ball State. They struggle at home against Vanderbilt.
But there was a snap of the finger solution there.
They did make a quarterback change.
And they were a completely different team.
They were. They were a completely different team. I mean, it was kind of a first-year defensive coordinator, but that defense was a lot better.
Everyone had them as a big, like, they were not a big favorite going into Wake Forest. That was a popular upset pick. Whispers started that week about maybe a change. Ian Book comes out. They put up, I think, 55 points. And I think immediately, at least fans and some media, looked at that schedule and thought, holy crap, this is going to be a playoff team if Ian Book's this good.
Wow.
There's not that. And look, if we saw that coming, if Notre Dame saw that coming, they would have started Ian Book from week one. So I don't want to make this like hindsight 2020 or, you know, we knew something they didn't. That answer is not coming. You're not going to fire someone midseason or like bench Jack Cohn for a true freshman 3 games in the season and like, oh, look how good they are. Like there's no like what's, I don't know.
Cause it's, I mean, quarterback's not the problem, no. Right? Like there needs to be like some offensive lineman on the bench that they're not playing that is suddenly ready. Or there needs to be, I don't know, like a new nickelback that they don't have. It's like that was a ready-made team. There's like, let's fix this one problem, and then all other problems will solve themselves. Like this team is not like that. It's just a lot more complicated. I'm not really sure where all that goes. I guess I only make that point. It's like we've seen them struggle in September before, like 2017. They were pretty good in September, but then really turned it on in October. 2018, September was a mess. Then it got a lot better. 2019.
They lost the Georgia game and were fine otherwise.
Lost to Georgia. Like, the Louisville game was okay. Pretty good. You know, then they turned it on from there. Like, I guess that gets a point you were making earlier. Like, they'll get better. It's just like, can they get so much? Like, they have to get the ground they have to cover in this sort of self-improvement is much more vast than I think anybody thought when the season started.
I mean, 2012, right? Like, it was such a miraculous season. It was such an enjoyable season for fans because it came out of nowhere and there were so many, like, great close moments. But I think if you ask any college football fan who's not a Notre Dame fan, and I think you may have gotten the offensive coordinator Chuck Martin on the record talking about yes. that. People put that out of the game, like, that's the team Notre Dame was that year. They somehow got this far. Good for them. Chuck Martin said on the record to you years later, we were a lot closer to being 3-9 that year than we were to 13-0, even though we were 12-1. Like, nothing about that season will ever make sense. It was which makes it all the more special and memorable.
Yes.
Like, is that the thread you hang on to right now? You're like, it just, like,
maybe, yeah, I don't, maybe that's it, right? Like, things are going to have to add up that, in fact, do not add up. And that was, like, 2012 in a nutshell was that.
Like, the schedule does not look as hard as we thought it would. But you're not good enough to talk about schedule right now if you're Notre Dame. It literally has to be 1 week at a time. And should beat Purdue, I think. We're basing that, I think, more on histories of both programs than we are what we've seen on the field from Notre Dame in 2 weeks. We'll see. I'm curious about Purdue's defense. I mean, they've got a good defensive line, which, as we've seen, can have its way with Notre Dame's offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Can they be disruptive enough? And, look, Jeff Brohm is – no one has a bigger bag of tricks than that guy when it comes to big games. He's going to have something, whether it's the Philly special – or an onside kick, or a halfback, whatever it is. Like, that guy goes all out for these type of games. And Notre Dame needs to be ready for that and a million other things, because they just have a lot of work to do right now.
Can we talk
about I was going to say, like, this. I thought we'd spend more time on Peacock because I expected this to be a not eventful game. So I thought that would be the bulk of this podcast, and we'd be done with it. The game gave us other ideas. I obviously watched it on Peacock. I'm now $7.50 broker for it because I got a discount. But it
business
but
expense.
I will
business
expect expense. It. But it was a 3 month trial, so there's that.
It was alarming when on Saturday morning I tried to, like, watch some EPL soccer and couldn't get Peacock to work. Like, I had to, like, hit refresh 4 times for the video to play. I'm like, okay, maybe things are just a little bit off. But, you know, get to the stadium, similar issues. But finally got the stream going. And then I tweeted Mayer's touchdown, the 4-yarder to begin. And people are like, whoa, you're 2 plays ahead of us. Like, that's not good. I mean, you can't charge people and then give them an inferior product. It wasn't even the same product. It was worse. So I don't... To me, this set back the whole streaming argument probably one media contract cycle. Because, like, the Peacock did not deliver. You can't be 30 seconds, 60 seconds behind and believe that you're doing a good job, because that's just... That's not what people... Like, if you got it in real time for free, and now you have to pay to get it delayed. That doesn't make any sense.
It's interesting because, like, that's streaming. Like, I have YouTube TV, so, like, as far as my viewing experience went, I didn't find it any different because I always stream, and I just, like, I know people have, like, I'll have a second screen up with a different game. Like, if I'm watching a game start to finish, like, I'm not going on Twitter for, like, to get spoiled. Like, I'm watching it in real time, and that's just me. I think it was different for everybody because I tweeted a play from the game and someone retweeted me saying, wow, Peacock's really behind because I haven't gotten this yet. And I had to reply and be like, no, I'm watching it on Peacock. So there was probably some distribution problems in that regard. I will say this, and again, I don't think this is unique to Peacock. I think this is a broadcast issue more than it is this specific game and streaming strategy issue. The Jack Cohn sack fumble, we got that mid-play. It came back from commercial. So you're not able to see that live. My connection went out right after they missed a 55-yard field goal. And I had a bunch of other screens on with a bunch of different streaming devices on it. Those were all fine. So I blame Peacock for that more than I do my crappy internet. I'll be very curious to see what the numbers are because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you were – in it, you were at the game writing about it. I had multiple texts in the second half of that game and obviously saw a bunch of people saying the same on Twitter, essentially saying, hey, how do I get Peacock? I got to watch the end of this. Like, I wonder if when we get the official numbers from this, we'll see like the quarter by quarter viewership, because I'm betting a lot of people who don't really care about either team handed over their credit card in the fourth quarter for the chance to watch Notre Dame lose to a MAC team. I'll be curious to see that. I will say, and you know, this is a subjective, I think broadcasting in particular is subjective. I thought Drew Brees was phenomenal.
I look forward to listening to that.
Like
it for that reason.
No ego. Didn't try any shtick. Called out a few plays Romo style beforehand. Was right about some, wrong about some, but like all like good rationale behind it. I thought he was really, really, really good for a guy who's never done this before.
That's encouraging to hear. I mean, that's what I'm most interested to sort of hear whenever the playback is up on Peacock, because you definitely lose that in the stadium. Speaking of 62,009, that was the attendance.
When's the last time it was that low in a non-pandemic year?
I mean, that I was asking around after the game, and I should have looked it up before the podcast, so I'm going to type it in and just sort of talk over myself to delay here. But I want, like, the old capacity of Notre Dame Stadium before the expansion in, I think it was 97. Yeah, I mean, that the capacity was 59,075. Up until 1996.
So smallest possible.
smallest since then. And I don't know if I was Notre Dame, I would probably like take a breather on like this is a real problem or not. Sort of let some more things play out. There's a pandemic going on still. It's Toledo. But if you're getting into like USC and it's 69,000.
Depends on the by that point it depends on the record.
Yeah, I mean that would be really alarming to me. Like I've not to harken back to 2007, but you like I covered it and it was sold out every game. You know, that was an awful, awful team and it was still sold out. So how this goes for Notre Dame, I don't know if this is the beginning of the trend or not, because there's so many variables at play, but it's something to at least monitor. But I do think the Peacock thing has to be, that's got to be done for a while until they can get that streaming situation figured out. Like, and because, I mean, maybe you're not this way, but like I enjoy the two screen experience of watching college football at home, where like the other screen is Twitter. And if you're getting plays called out a minute in advance, like that ruins that part of the experience.
I enjoy it. Like I have Twitter up on Saturdays to kind of monitor what's going on elsewhere, less than I do play by play, but I obviously don't disagree with your point. The thing with me, like you knew it wasn't going to go off without a hitch. It was something new.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of like how much can Notre Dame swallow this criticism, or NBC or whomever, swallow this criticism and work out the kinks and provide a better product next time, presumably next season. I did, you know, we talked when they announced this about a month ago. We talked about this on the show and you said something to the effect of, if you're going to take away something that's always been free, you better give us something extra. And I don't know what that extra is. And I would agree with you on that. You know, they announced it as this big thing this week where we got a pregame show and Jack Sorbrick talks to Mike Tirico and, you know, all the normal stuff you would get on a pregame. I mean, I like Corey Robinson. I like Jack Collinsworth. I felt like in some ways they were there to be like, hey, look, we're going to make this longer than usual because it's on Peacock. Like Father Jenkins gave an address on the field pregame. I did not hear it because I was there, but the show was still going on then. And they were basically whispering on set while talking because the crowd went silent when Father Jenkins was talking. Yeah. So that was a little awkward and I felt wasn't exactly well executed or planned out beforehand. Corey, God bless him, had a couple of instances, halftime and postgame, where he said, the good news is Notre Dame's only down a couple points.
I did catch a few pronouns.
Not surprising, and I don't have a problem with it. It's just kind of funny because he's newer at this and is catching himself in real time. I don't know. I mean, I trying to picture a scenario, result of the game notwithstanding, where like this where Peacock happens today, and everyone's like, "Oh, that was great. They should do this again." Like, that was never going to happen.
I mean, you would have to have, I don't know, like mic'd up something. I don't know what the scenario is. You're right about that. There probably was not a like, this is actually better than what I was getting before. But it could, like, to me, it just couldn't be worse. Like, and the lag made it worse.
That's, I mean,
so
yeah.
Like, you can't do that. And I understand, like, that's streaming, right? Like, when I watch Peacock and I'm watching Liverpool, per se, like, and then I'm on Twitter and I see a bunch of Liverpool tweeting a goal, like, I know it's going to come in the next 10 seconds. That's annoying. But this felt like, you know, coming back for commercial breaks, you know, 2.5 plays in advance. Like, it just felt wonky and offbeat. And that was, I know that's part of streaming, but that's got to be improved before you take your home schedule and stream the whole thing. It's got to be better than that.
I would agree. I mean, I don't think we're on the doorstep quite yet of having a full home schedule on pay for streaming only. To my understanding, Notre Dame wanted a much bigger game than Toledo for this. And NBC, I think, was not quite ready for that just yet.
I think NBC was right.
I mean, with the way this game played out on the field, I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer in that department. It
you make a good point.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I'm more fascinated about the long-term implications of this and what the numbers were for this. It was never going to go off without a hitch. It was never going to make people happy. I think it was a gamble worth taking, even if they don't do it again, in my personal opinion. I say that with due respect to all the fans who were frustrated and couldn't get there.
I agree with you on that. I think you got to try stuff and see if you can make it work. But then you also have to have the humility to realize when it doesn't. You know, that sideline cam from 2 years ago, I appreciated them trying something new. Like, maybe this is the different way to cover the sport. It didn't work. And then they got rid of it. So that was great. You know, streaming, I get why you would want to try it. I do think ultimately we will all be streaming everything at some point. But it just didn't feel like the tech was there for it. And one of the things that I find great about college football, and I mean Notre Dame is definitely part of this, it's like it's the breadth of reach of the product. Like, Notre Dame does not have this national fan base because they made it difficult to consume Notre Dame football. Like, I think that in one of the press releases there was a reference to like the Lindsey Nelson highlights. Like, this is the exact opposite of that. This is making it really hard to see Notre Dame football, not bringing it to people that wouldn't get it otherwise. So it's like, if you're Notre Dame, I hope that you are sensitive to the fact that you are closing yourself off potentially to your next generation of fans with streaming. You are catering to people who are already fans, and ultimately that is not a winning proposition long term. But I'm with you. I think that you probably come out of this weekend, if you're Notre Dame, think like, all right, there's a lot to get sorted out here before this can be a viable thing.
Last note on this, unless you want to add something. As much as I think stream is the future, I don't think this is like, I don't think it'll be as simple as like 5 years from now, every Notre Dame game will have to be purchased via Peacock subscription. I think it's part of a long-term philosophy that is hand in hand with their football independence and owning their own content, whether it's with NBC or another media partner in a couple of years. And I think, and I could be wrong, but from what I gather from the people I've talked to, pretty much since this was announced about a month ago, I think they're very sensitive to the transactional relationship between fans and want fans to feel like they have a piece of ownership or a part of something beyond just 6 or 7 home games a year. And I think that ultimately folds itself into some form of Fighting Irish TV. Every home game is going to be like this. You know, streamed, but you're not like you're paying for more than just weekly content, merch boxes, memberships, access, other things. I think all this will be folded into a very neat and fan-friendly package. They're still, like everyone else, trying to figure out what the best way to do that is. But yeah, that's kind of my takeaway from it.
Yeah, I think without question, fans are now consumers, and football is now content. And that's just the reality that we're living in with sports. And how does Notre Dame maximize that or figure out the best way to take advantage of the opportunity? I'm not really sure. I don't think putting games on Peacock is that. I think Peacock could be a really interesting vehicle for Notre Dame with Fighting Irish TV. I think there's a ton of opportunity there. But the games, I think you're better off almost sort of leaving as they were for the time being and then supplementing them with shoulder programming. Maybe it's the pregame show. Maybe it's a postgame show. Maybe it's a lot of midweek stuff. But the game itself, to me, I did not get the sense that that worked today.
Yeah, I would agree. Before we go, got to shout out Myron Tagovailoa-Bosa. Had a game-winning play and then literally had to FaceTime into his father's funeral. God bless that guy. I don't know what else to say. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was, man. Because he was supposed to come in for post-game interviews. And then sports information came in and said he actually won't be in today. And we're like, oh, okay. And like, because he's, you know, connecting with his family back in Hawaii for the funeral of his dad, he's like, oh my God, it's just like, it's unbelievable to hear that and think about like what had to be going through his mind all day. So yeah, definitely a shout out to MTA on that. That was, and like, and a great guy. Like I wouldn't say that about everybody on the roster, but he is really a like one of those heart of gold types of kids. It's fun to cover, it's fun to interact with, and so you know our thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family.
Likewise. We'll be back Thursday. Got a couple guests we're juggling right now. We'll see who it is. We can always call our friend John Walters if all else fails again, and he can we'll read the bubble screen first about his reaction to Peacock, but we can always call him up. We got a few others in the pipeline. We're hoping to get on the show soon. And these episodes, much like Notre Dame season, are going to become a lot more interesting than I think any of us ended up predicting, at least before Wisconsin. I mean, we all had that Wisconsin game circled as like the Brian Kelly eclipses Newt Rockne. I mean, he could tie him next week, right? Like, that's a big story. That's a big storyline. Like, I don't know if that's at the top of anyone's mind right now. We forgot to mention it till 52 minutes into the show, but like, yeah, that's kind of where we are right now.
Notre Dame football, never a dull moment, even when there should be. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this surprisingly meatier and longer version of the Shamrock post Notre Dame Toledo than either of us expected. Notre Dame 32, Toledo 29. Matt and I will be back next week. Thanks for listening.